This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Heart Greens. Helping to support healthy blood pressure and circulation just became hassle-free. Introducing Heart Greens, the functional food that you drink using the same dark leafy greens recommended by both the DASH and Mediterranean diets. Get a free canister of Heart Greens with your first order and a 100% money-back guarantee. Heart Greens even guarantees you'll love the taste. Call 800-951-8940. That's 800-951-8940. Or visit IntelligentGreens.com. That's IntelligentGreens.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about neurologic disorders. We're going to approach it from a natural standpoint. The book is Herbs and Nutrients for Neurological Disorders, Treatment Strategies for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Stroke, Multiple Sclerosis, Migraine, and Seizures. And our guest is the co-author. He's Dr. Sidney Kern, K-U-R-N. And Dr. Kern is a practicing neurologist. He is also integrated into his practice acupuncture first and then herbal medicine. And he has taken a very comprehensive look at how natural therapies can support recovery from various neurological conditions. So he's known about this both from a conventional standpoint as well as from an integrative standpoint. And it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Kern.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, good. So in your book, you've grouped these conditions together. Actually, these conditions, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, stroke, MS, migraine, seizures, they comprise about maybe 3/4 of what a neurologist ordinarily sees in daily practice, right? I mean, there are many, you know, arcane other types of problems, but you kind of cover a lot of ground there when you attack these various conditions.
Yeah, I left out peripheral neuropathy and head trauma and a few others, but these are abundant in a neurologist practice.
Mm-hmm. And so one of your contentions in the book is that these conditions have a lot in common. So what is it that they share in terms of common pathways? There seem to be several mechanisms that cause these diseases. The pathophysiology is the jargon we use in medicine. And right. The pathophysiology leads us to the potential for interventions with some diet, with natural products, mm-hmm. and with herbal medicine.
Right. So as I, the book came out of a series of lectures over a number of years, and then Cheryl Shook, who had just gotten her PhD in neurophysiology, and she happened to wander into my office. She had just got her PhD and said, you know, I'm not doing anything. What would you like to do? And I said, well, geez, I really like to get this book out. And so she was essential. I mean, she edited it, and in the second edition, the hardback, she wrote the chapter on sleep. She runs a sleep lab. And so, but in the process of writing the book, I had, I guess you'd call it an epiphany, where I realized that on the surface, MS is quite distinct. Well, let's take Alzheimer's, for example, and Parkinson's. That's a little easier. On the surface, they look like very distinct disorders. But if you look at the underlying mechanisms, the pathology, and so on. And then you look at a number of mechanisms. One of the most important is what's called excitotoxicity. And you can have excitotoxicity inside yourself when you have an imbalance between two neurotransmitters, glutamate, mm-hmm. GABA. And glutamate is an excitatory neurotransmitter and GABA is an inhibitory neurotransmitter. And they are about 80% of the neurotransmitters in the brain, GABA mm-hmm. and glutamate.
And of course, this is a theory that was elaborated originally by Dr. Russell Blaylock, or at least popularized by Dr. Blaylock. He wrote a couple of books on that subject, implicating aspartame and MSG in the epidemic of neuroexcitation that may cause
brain
problems.
Those are exogenous or outside your body. Those are things that you would take in your diet that could be excitotoxic. Pesticides and herbicides are excitotoxic. Within your own body, there's an important balance between GABA and glutamate. Glutamate's very important for memory, for keeping you awake. And GABA is very important for balancing glutamate so that you don't get overexcited. When you excite a nerve cell beyond its ability to accept the excitation, it will self-destruct. It's called apoptosis, programmed cell death. So it's important for GABA to balance this. And actually, you have your own, they're called endocannabinoids. So cannabinoids are the molecules you find in marijuana. There are 60 of them. There's only one that gets you high, which is THC. The rest do not. There's another one besides THC called CBD. And CBD and THC together are really predominant in marijuana, but there's 58 other ones. So those are what we would call exogenous cannabinoids or cannabinoids outside your body. Cannabinoid is the chemical name for these molecules. But inside your body, you have the endocannabinoid system. And it's very similar to the whole opiate issue about 40 years ago when scientists discovered that you have opiates that you manufacture inside your body, the endorphins and so on. So we are at the same place now with cannabinoids, and we have what's called an endocannabinoid system. We have anandamide and 2-AG, those are two endocannabinoids. There's probably more. And then there's receptors. Every transmitter or messenger molecule in the body is like a key, and there's a lock, and it's a key that opens the lock. So there's a receptor for every messenger molecule and neurotransmitter in your body. And one of the roles of the endocannabinoids is to balance glutamate and GABA. And so what happens is if there's an excess of glutamate, too much excitotoxicity, which occurs in a lot of disorders, it occurs in pain and in inflammation and oxidation and so on, the downstream, there's a neuron and the connection between one neuron and another is called a synapse. And the downstream, nerve cell, if it's getting too much, glutamate, will send a signal and, the cannabinoids, 2-AG and anandamide, will be secreted, and they will turn off the upstream nerve cell to stop secreting so much glutamate. So that's one of the functions of the endocannabinoids.
To take this to like an extreme, is it possible that someone who has Parkinson's and has balance problems and is disoriented, or someone who's got memory problems with Alzheimer's and, is losing it, could use pot, which is considered, a mind-bending substance, and get a benefit?
Yeah, you wouldn't want to give them too much THC, But fortunately, like in California, for example, you know, we have, we're getting fairly sophisticated so that you can get a marijuana product that has a ratio that you want. So you can get a like a 10-to-1 CBD to THC, or you can get a 20-to-1 CBD to THC. You wouldn't get high on these. There's just not enough THC. On the other hand,
Do you need a doctor's prescription for this, or are there open dispensaries in California?
No, you. We don't have the recreational. I don't know exactly how it works in Colorado, but we actually just passed the law for recreational marijuana, so I'll know. But up to date, you've had to have a prescription either from your primary doctor, or you can go to a doctor that specializes in marijuana medicine to get that.
Yeah, we recently interviewed for Intelligent Medicine Dr. Rashna Patel, who's one of your colleagues in California, who actually subspecializes in dealing with medical issues with various admixtures of marijuana components, THC, CBD, and whatnot.
It's amazing. Spectrum of disorders that can respond.
And she claimed that patients with spasticity, you know, one of the features of Parkinson's is people get very rigid and they need medicine to release their muscles, and shakes, which is certainly a feature of, you know, tremor, that tremor is remarkably alleviated with marijuana products. And I've actually seen videos, you know, pre and post of patients who came in, you know, barely able to stand, extremely tremulous with Parkinson's, and then a few minutes afterwards, after administration of a proper THC-CBD combination, I'm not sure what it is, major alleviation of symptoms.
Yeah, I think that's the case. You know, there's actually enough evidence that it is sort of an indication in MS spasticity that the American Association for Neurology has that as an indication. When you're getting to older patients, it gets them a little harder to introduce them to cannabis products. The other disorder, actually, which I should mention, is brain cancer or glioblastoma, which is definitely increasing in prevalence. Years ago, I'll close the door because my wife and my dog's coming into the house. Years ago, I would see a glioblastoma maybe once every 2 years. But we've had 5 physicians in Santa Rosa, which is a population of about 150, just in the last 5 years, die of glioblastomas.
Wow.
And in my own family, my nephew died, and then we just went to a funeral of a fellow that had it, so on. The reason I mention it is that it's well established that cannabinoids kill glioblastoma cells in petri dishes. So we know that. And we have a practitioner here who is comparable to the one you mentioned, who really keeps up to date. And this practitioner here goes to all the international conferences and so on. So he had a number of glioblastoma patients, and I saw 3 of them. And one of them had glioblastoma multiforme for 5 years. And I think, as I recall, there was no evidence on an MRI or CT of residual masses in his brain.
Very unusual.
And that's unheard of, because without treatment, you know, you can last 4 to 6 months.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then this friend of ours, who we just went to his funeral with treatment, he only lasted 8 months.
Yeah.
So there's
tremendous potential by harnessing the endocannabinoid system. Now, in your list of similarities among these neurological conditions, you also list cellular energetics, the the mitochondria. So what's going on with that, and where's the commonality among these disorders?
Well, the most work that's been done is on Parkinson's disease. It's well established that the mitochondria is responsible for multiple tasks, but one of the most important is to make ATP. The ATP is to the body's energy what the dollar bill is to the economy. And so what happens, it's well established in Parkinson's that the mitochondria are inefficient. They do not make as much ATP. And if the cell does not have enough ATP or energy molecules, it cannot sustain the potential across the cell that the mitochondria is in. And if it can't sustain the potential across the cell, it's not protected from things that would excite the cell, in particular glutamate, which excites the cell, so that a Parkinson's cell, particularly in what's called the substantia nigra in the midbrain, it gets overexcited easily, and when that happens, there's actually genes to cause cell death, and it's called apoptosis, and the glutamate that's overexciting this cell will result in apoptosis, and these cells die. And the more they die, the more symptoms of Parkinson's that you get. You know, I wanted to bring you back to your original question because I really didn't answer it.
Mm-hmm.
The epiphany I had is that a number of these disorders, particularly ALS, which I don't discuss in the book, it's not very common. It's Lou Gehrig's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease, at least on the surface, it occurred to me that the underlying mechanisms are the same. There's weakening of the mitochondria. There's an excess of excitotoxicity. And it turns out that there's inflammation in all of these disorders. And then nutrition is a factor because, as you well know, the mineral and vitamin content of the products of corporate farming are significantly reduced to where they were in 1900. They may be down 80%. If you buy organic produce, it's about three times more of the nutrient density than you get in commercial farming for a lot of reasons, and I don't know if we have time to go into it here. So one of the problems is you don't get the vitamins and minerals you need, and these vitamins and minerals are very important for the function of enzymes in the body, and in particular, the magnesium levels are quite low, and magnesium actually attaches to the receptor that the glutamate molecule acts on. And if you don't have enough magnesium, the glutamate has an easier time exciting the cell, ultimately resulting in cell death. So that's nutrition is in there. And then the genetics of the individual plays a significant role. So what occurred to me is actually, and I've seen this in my clinical practice, that some members will go down the path where they have ALS, others will have Alzheimer's, or another might have Parkinson's disease. So it's a dance that your genetics do with the external environment, with the diet and exposures to chemicals in the environment. There's studies showing that, for example, if you examine the blood of individuals, the average individual has 400 residues of pharmaceuticals, pesticides, and herbicides. A residue means you don't have the whole molecule, but you'll have part of the molecule. And so we all carry a toxic burden with us, and that plays a role as well. But depending upon your genetic profile, you might ultimately develop one neurodegenerative disorder, whereas another individual will develop a different neurodegenerative disorder. But the underlying mechanisms are all the same.
You also allude to a popular theory, which is that the microbiome may play a major role in brain disorders. Can you explain that?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And actually, it's become mainstream medicine, particularly in Parkinson's disease. And I just ordered a kit from Genova Diagnostics to measure a lot of aspects of the bacteria in the gut. You have about 2 pounds of bacteria in the gut. And, you know, the old saying, you should think with your gut, and the naturopathic saying is that death starts in the gut. That was a very wise statement because, as it turns out, the bacteria in the gut secrete all the same neurotransmitters that the brain do, and they have all the same receptors that the brain does. And so there's a communication between the microbiome actually refers to the entire bacterial population. I mean, you have it in your lung, and you have it in your gut. You probably have it in your sinuses. It's particularly in organs that are exposed to the outside world. And it turns out that there are certain characteristics of your gut microbiome that can play a role in accelerating Parkinson's disease, depending upon which bacteria are in the microbiome, what they secrete. So they might contribute to excitotoxicity, and they might contribute to inflammation, which is also significant in Parkinson's as well as Alzheimer's disease.
You also point to a role of heavy metals as being implicated in some of these conditions.
Yeah. Heavy metals, unfortunately, are prevalent, and they accelerate oxidation. That's another underlying mechanism. Oxidation is very closely linked with inflammation, and oxidation is when you take an electron. When one thing oxidizes another molecule, you take an electron from that other molecule. The actual description is not necessarily relevant, but what happens is when you oxidize a protein in the body, then the protein has a very complex shape. A protein is a sequence of amino acids, and that's sort of the first shape, if you will, of that molecule. The second one is how the proteins are gathered together, whether they're in a helical form or what's called a beta pleated sheet.
In effect, how they fold together.
The folding is actually the tertiary aspect. This is the secondary aspect, is how they line up with each other, and then the third aspect is how they fold and they form very complex shapes. If you cause one of the amino acids to be ionized, you will change the folding of the protein, and if it's an enzyme, it will no longer work because like a lock and key, you've changed the key by changing the folding of the protein, and so it won't fit into the lock anymore. That occurs through oxidation. And that was one of the theories early on of why we age.
The so-called free radical theory of aging.
Correct. I mean, when you process the mitochondria processes fatty acids and there's the Krebs cycle, and then there's what's called the electron transport chain. There's two sort of machines inside the mitochondria for making energy and breaking down products and creating ATP. And I lost the train of thought there.
The free radicals basically break the energy production machinery and create problems with, you know, ubiquitous problems throughout the body. If the energy pathways are damaged, then all manner of problems will result. And it seems to me that the brain is probably the most energy avid part of the body, notwithstanding the heart's role in pumping millions of times
really
during your lifetime.
I think it takes at least 30% of the blood flow. I guess what I was going to say is that just like when you burn wood, you make smoke. When you break down food nutrients in the mitochondria, you unfortunately create free radicals. And so you have what's called an antioxidant system. There's a number of molecules, and they all work together. The common ones that we know about are vitamin C and vitamin A. There's one called alpha-lipoic acid. And alpha-lipoic acid actually, once an antioxidant like vitamin C takes care of a free radical, it now becomes oxidized and it has to be reduced into a reduced form in order to work again. And so there are two molecules that actually do that, alpha-lipoic acid and another one called glutathione. So you like to keep all of your antioxidants in their reduced form, otherwise they don't work. One of the theories of the progression of Parkinson's is that giving Sinemet, giving L-DOPA, we're actually causing some of these motor cells in the brain to work harder.
It's like a burnout thing where you over-rev the body's, you stoke the cellular machinery, but thereby may accelerate the disease.
Well, that's right. I mean, what's happening is, the breakdown of dopamine actually creates free radicals. And so there's a feedback loop. As you create the free radicals, you may be doing more damage to the primary machinery in the area that makes dopamine. So this is kind of an unsettled issue. Mm-hmm. But basically that's why we try to hold off using Sinemet as much as possible in Parkinson's disease, because we're a little bit concerned that it's, mm-hmm. It could be accelerating the disease itself.
Don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes, as they said on Bunker Hill. It's keep your powder dry. Okay, so what we've done is, I think we've done a good job of setting the stage for a discussion of specific therapies for various neurological disorders. And our listeners know that we divide these podcasts into two parts. In part two, Dr. Kern, I'd like to discuss specific strategies for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, stroke, MS, migraine, seizures. But it's all in the book, Herbs and Nutrients for Neurological Disorders, Treatment Strategies for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Stroke, MS, Migraine, and Seizures, by today's guest, Sidney Kern, K-U-R-N. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.